Welcome to your Aged Care Compass podcast. We help you make sense of the Australian aged care system by having conversations about topics you've asked us about. We're joined by thought leaders, professional experts, and people just like you and I who talk about their experience in the aged care sector. Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's episode. I'm Coral, your host, and today I'm joined by occupational therapist Kelly Forbes. Kelly is a community occupational therapist who has been working in community settings for over 13 years. She leads a team of 20 occupational therapists at Forbes Care, providing services across both aged care and disability communities. Welcome to the show, Kelly.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
I'm really looking forward to our theme for this month, which is occupational therapy, and in particular, how an OT can support older people. You have a large team of occupational therapists. Tell us about the different areas of practice that your team of OTs cover.
Sure. So Forbes Care is just purely an occupational therapy practice. So we service from Gympie, which is about an hour north of the Sunshine Coast, all the way down to North Brisbane. So we've got quite a large area there. We work in a range of community settings. So we work mostly in the community. So that means our OTs are mobile. We service home modifications that can be major or minor. So if someone needs some modifications to their house, we look at equipment. So sometimes people might need equipment. That might be a walker or a pickup stick. It can really range depending on the person and the complexity of the situation. And we also work in the DVA, home care and CHSP spaces, as well as NDIS. So yeah, all those community-based occupational therapy services.
Wow, lots of experience there. So if we consider an older person living at home and they're becoming frailer, perhaps they've had a fall or their family is concerned about them, how could an OT support an older person remain able and safe in their own home?
When I usually get a referral like this, I will go out and assess just the area that they fell to begin with and make that area safe. So it might be removal of slippery mats or putting in supportive equipment in place or even removing clutter from the home just to make sure it's safe. And there, from there, we typically do like a whole home assessment as well. So we'll look at all other vulnerable areas or every area of the house, to be honest. So that can range from how they get out of the bed, what side, what's it like, is there enough light? It can also be getting on and off the toilet, the pathway to the bathroom at night, the pathway to the bathroom from the living room, and looking at shower areas. So we might assess, how do they get into the shower? Is it safe? Is it slippery? How wet does the flooring get? Is there enough supportive railing out there to help them get in and out? Yeah, so we really do look around the whole house. We do like a comprehensive falls assessment or risk assessment.
And what are the most common types of home modifications, if there are common types, that an OT would recommend for an older person?
It can really work on a scale. So usually when through funding bodies that we work with, they like to start with minor mods first to see if just like a rail or some non-slip flooring might be suffice, like work out the situation or make it safer. And usually the rail in the bathroom and the toilet, so shower and toilet, are really my common ones that we get referrals through. And that can be referred through the CHSP program really well, because it's a really well-funded program. Or not well-funded, but that's where it approaches that. And then they're really vulnerable areas. So the shower, there's obviously it's wet, it's slippery. The temperature changes. So if we've got high blood pressure or low blood pressure, it can really make us a bit wobbly or giddy. And then the other one I commonly do in regards to home modification is a ramp or a rail at the back step going out to the laundry. I find that's also been a really popular one because a lot of people fall opening the door, holding the laundry basket, stepping out. It might be dusk, so we might even put like a sensor light there to make sure it's lit well. So yeah, they're our most common ones.
Excellent. And are there any modifications that might be not as common, more unusual, but certainly aligned with the person's individual needs?
a ramp in the internal garage. I had a good think about this, and I've always thought that the step from the garage to the internal home has always been quite a large step. And I always assess that because it's dark. Normally there's not much lighting in that area. It's a big step. So you can put a ramp internally as long as it doesn't obviously get in the way of the car. And that's been a really popular one and allows for safe access to the home. And it mitigates using the front step. So there's normally a step into the home. And this way we can have a large step, nice safe access there. So that's always one that people don't consider. The other one is the shower area can be modified interestingly. So I can put railings from one step to another or put a shower curtain in lieu of a door. You can do quite minors to make the bathroom safe, and they can be temporary approaches. So you can remove the screen door for, it might just be, well, I'm healing from a hip replacement or something like that, and then put it back on. So there are lots of little options there. My favorite is one I've ever done that was a bit strange was a pole from the roof to the floor. And that was able to provide someone with enough support to get in and out of the shower. And it looked like a stripper pole. So we always had a lot of fun with it.
Well, look, that's fantastic. You've actually touched on, we're going into support at home now and some significant changes with what people can and can't do with their funding. And a lot of people are saying the $15,000 cap on home modifications just isn't going to be enough for a bathroom modification. And well, it's not when you think about a complete bathroom modification. But if people can implement some of the simpler strategies that you've just suggested, and I've actually been into homes where they've taken out the shower doors in the little cubicle and they have a rail and the curtain as well. And it's sort of opened it up to a wet area and it's fantastic. It just makes the space so much more usable. So I think you've given our listeners some great tips already.
Yeah, minors allow, like, it's really quick. So, you know, if we do a major mod, it might take months to do, you know, or whatever it might be. So the minors allow us to get in there, put a rail in, make it safe. You might feel a lot more comfortable and change your mind about getting a major in that time. So they're really great to be considered.
Yeah, yep. And Kelly, what about assistive technology? Are there some essential technologies that a family should consider when trying to keep their older loved ones safer at home?
I always think a touch lamp beside the bed at night is a really great one, because obviously nighttime's when most of us are alone and we go to sleep and it takes our eyes a little bit more time to wake up. So a touch lamp is such an easy, cheap solution. It's $40 to $60 and it just allows someone to quickly turn the light on and before they rush up, and then paired with some sets of night lights along the pathway. I find that there's some really simple solutions like that can really help reduce a fall and increase someone feeling supported at home. Often as well, a great alarm system like a personal response system is really good as well, because it allows them to feel safe if they're in the shower. If they're waterproof, you can get them for around your neck and on your wrist, and it just allows everyone to feel more comfortable. And what happens as well when those alarms are pressed, there's always going to be someone to come. So even if you're away on holidays and, you know, you press the button, the ambulance will come or a neighbor will come, or it's really supportive and it really gives that independence in the home.
Yeah, those personal alarms are, they're just the best. And I actually recommend them to everybody. My mum had one, and I'm one of four kids. And so we all had our mobile phone numbers programmed into the alarm. And then we had 000 as the fifth number. And when that alarm would go off, I remember one day I was in a conference and I literally just could not get to the phone, and it was within minutes that I cut my conversation short and went outside, and my siblings, one of whom lives in Perth and one lives in Sydney, had already phoned me and said, I've spoken to Mum, it's okay. Like, all of us just kind of dropped everything and were like, right, Mum's had a fall, we need to address this. And in fact, my sister in Perth had actually already spoken to the ambulance as well. So incredibly reassuring, and it means that assistance can get there immediately when that alarm is activated. Yeah.
Especially because, you know, it can be at night and you might be asleep and the ambulance might be needed at that point, because people don't realize just because the ambulance comes doesn't mean you're going to hospital.
That's right.
They will assess you to make sure, you know, you haven't broken anything and just recommend maybe a follow up with the GP in the morning. So it's a really great service.
Yeah. Yep. Kelly, what is a functional capacity assessment?
So functional capacity assessments are really common in the NDIS space, like a lot more disability-based space, because people need that assessment to obtain funding. Right. In aged care, it's very similar to like a complex ACAT assessment. So what I would say in the aged care space, in occupational therapy, would do a complex initial assessment. So that's where we look at the whole house, how you function in the shower, how you function in the bathroom. And when we say function, it means how you do something.
Yes.
And is it safe? Yeah, it's a really comprehensive assessment of yourself and of their home environment.
It's absolutely worth a person's while. And I think it's important to emphasize this point that there's a lot of confusion about the role of OTs and what OTs can do in the aged care space. And I always say to people, if you're going to have an occupational therapist to come out to assess you for a mobility aid or, I don't know, some equipment to help you cut the vegetables easier when you're preparing dinner or something, don't just do that. Get an entire assessment, because those older people are living in the home every day and they don't, what's the saying? You don't know what you don't know. They don't see what they're not seeing. So to have an OT come into the home and just do such a full assessment, it always reveals things that people haven't thought about, that when you suggest it to them, they're like, that's a really good idea. I need to do that. That will make me safer. That will make it easier for me to do my activities of daily living at home. So can't stress enough how important I feel it is to have an OT come and be part of your care team or your support team.
Yeah, and some of the most simple things I've recommended have been so effective. It might be that you sleep on the left-hand side of the bed, but let's move to the right-hand side where your hip's not so bad and you can transfer out safely. And it's just making those light suggestions that can change the way, oh, I'm not worried about getting up in the night now because I actually can roll to that side. So if they can just be simple suggestions, I'm not going to come in and tear that, put rails everywhere and do this. It can just be one or two things that work and just make it a bit safer for yourself.
Absolutely. So are all OT assessments completed face-to-face, Kelly, or can some OT assessments be completed via telehealth?
It just depends on the nature of the request and also the person's ability to use technology too. That's really determined on whether telehealth can be done. A good example is I might be able to prescribe a rail in the bathroom if someone's there to help take the measurements and also help direct and film someone, because I've got to observe someone transferring out of the shower and things like that. So it just depends on the sort of support they have and also on the sort of services in the area, because there might not be someone to assist, not at work. And it can also depend on the type of therapy. Like I would assume that I might not be able to do tech-based assessments with someone with advanced dementia or teach someone something over telehealth. So it just really depends on the situation. And so usually when we get a referral like that, we actually screen it and we'll say this is not appropriate and then refer to a service in the area that could probably do a more face-to-face assessment. That happens a lot in our service. So if we got a referral for somewhere that we didn't have the capacity to do, let's say like we don't do driving assessments, if we got that, I would then link someone in with the driving assessor in that area.
Okay. Community pharmacies keep Australia healthy. With 6,000 locations nationwide, they're open early, late and longer for convenient, accessible and safe care. Pharmacists provide home medicine reviews, dose administration aids and essential vaccinations. Thanks to additional training, many can now treat common conditions like ear infections, wounds, and skin issues. They also support management of chronic conditions in partnership with your healthcare team. Ask your pharmacist how they can help you and your family stay well. I wanted to ask you about the GEET program, Goods, Equipment, and Assistive Technology. It's a big topic in itself. But as a clinician, as an OT potentially working within this program, can you explain to our listeners what the GEET program is, Kelly?
So it's an equipment-based program that allows for $1,000 to about $1,500 worth of equipment to be accessed. It's really great for low-cost AT, so it might be like a long-handled broom or a walker or something along like under that $1,000 threshold. The person needs to have a MAC referral to access this. So you contact my aged care to accept, to organise it through your RAS assessor or your ACAT provider or over the phone. The problem with this program is that it covers the cost of the equipment, but what it doesn't consider in that one referral is the cost of the OT or the physio. Mm. So allied health services also need to be accessed to be able to access it because the OT and physio put through the application through to the GEET program. So that's kind of like the hiccup in the system. But you can access occupational. So when you're calling my aged care to ask for the GEET program, you then also ask for a referral from OT as well through the CHSP program.
Right. And now, so that being the case, if that happened, you as the contracted OT under the CHSP program could assess the person and CHSP would pay for your service. And then if you made that recommendation, they could potentially get up to $1,000 or $1,500 worth of equipment through GEET.
Yes.
That's how it works.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes, but GEET also runs out of funding. So it might, GEET is a fluctuating portal of funding that, you know, they can close the portal at times and we won't be able to make that application until it reopens at certain times because it is based on sort of a CHSP funding body.
Yeah.
Home care package, people on a package can access the program, but they need to have depleted their funding to be able to access it or it needs to be an emergency service.
Right.
So, an example would be I've been able to obtain like a pressure mattress for someone who had to, their funding hadn't built up yet in their package. And then we were able to access that because they had an emergency situation. They meet all the thresholds, all the eligibility, and then we were able to access. But what I wasn't able to do was then go and review it. So there's holes in that system.
Yeah. Really good to know, though, that even if a person is on a home care package that they can actually access, we used to call them top-up services from CHSP. So great to know that GEET falls within that range as well for people who might need some equipment or assistive technology on an urgent basis. So support at home, now that commences on, supposed to be commencing on November the 1st, is that having any impact on your team?
So it's not having much of an impact because the way that Forbes Care funds or offers OT services to home care package participants is that it's in a package. So we might offer a 3-hour package or a 2-hour package, and that would be what covers the cost of the initial assessment, the driving and the reporting. From there, that's required. So it hasn't had much of an impact on us. It will have an impact on providers who charge like hourly. So it might be you don't kind of quote before you go out and you're like, you just work on an hourly basis and then charge for whatever. They will need to be able to provide a package service to the service providers or the home care package case managers and things like that.
Right. I'm a champion for reablement and a restorative approach to maintaining a person's independence and well-being. And Support at Home recognises the benefit of having clinicians involved in the older person's care by excluding clinical care from the co-contributions. The restorative care pathway, which is the rebranded program, as we currently know it as short-term restorative care, we'll offer more providers the opportunity to deliver an individualised program of reablement. Are there any providers that you are currently working with who are discussing with you the possibility of you supporting their clients under the new restorative care pathway, Kelly?
I think Support at Home is still a little bit up in the air for providers at the moment because they rolled it out and then the next minute they were, well, it's in November now. So I still think a lot of the providers are making sure they've got all their bases done first. I see that program, the restorative care program, as a natural extension of the work we already do through the supported home and home care packages. And we already provide individualized and time-limited therapy that helps empower people to stay in their home. So while discussions are still emerging in this sector, we're enthusiastic about providing or supporting providers who want to embed re-ablement in their services. So we haven't got it linked in yet, but I'm hoping that providers will reach out. I think that will happen more naturally as the program actually is rolled out.
Actually begins. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. And look, we were talking off air a minute ago about this, and we're having Ben Happ come onto the program in a couple of weeks. And if there's anyone really that's got their finger on the pulse, I feel, with support at home, it's Ben. Shout out to you, Ben. And so Ben is going to be discussing short-term restorative care and the restorative care pathway. And look, I just love this program so much. And I feel that you're really well placed. You've already got those established connections with the community and providers. So once Support at Home begins and we get a grip on this new program, I'm really excited for what you will be able to offer more providers with this kind of re-ablement approach.
It's such a great program because it's based a lot of like TCP and things that have been previously tried in the past, and we know how successful they were. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing this approach in the home as well.
Yeah. Yep. You're asked a lot of questions by a lot of people all the time. And interestingly, we are asked the same kind of questions as you are about occupational therapy and your role in the in-home aged care sector. I'd like to take a look at some of those questions now. Let's have a chat about them. One of the questions you're asked quite a lot is, how long does it take for equipment or modifications to be arranged?
So this can really depend on your location, so where you live, or your provider requires payment before or after the service is completed. So sometimes mods require payment before going out. So it can depend on even just invoicing within the providing service. And it also can depend on if the equipment's in stock. So an example is I might be able to get a small shower chair really quickly from the local provider, but if I needed a complex tilt and space commode that's scripted, it might take a few weeks or a few months even to arrange the trial.
Wow.
And normally that you can tell on based on the price of that equipment. So something's like $90 shower chair, easy. I can grab that from the chemist normally. But a complex commode that might require hiring, needs trialing, it needs scripting. So it really does depend. It's not an immediate service if it's not complex.
And you've got to get it right with those big ticket items, haven't
you? Yeah. Yes, because if we don't get it right, it can be dangerous. So yep. If I prescribe the wrong cushion or, well, not that I would prescribe anything wrong, but if we rush a decision and just get something that's available just because that's quick, you can cause a pressure wound. So equipment needs to be trialed properly, not rushed if it can be, and also ensured that it's safe and that's providers can use it too. So when we're looking at equipment, we're not necessarily just looking at the person, but also the person who is pushing the wheelchair.
Yes.
Or what sort of supports they need or how they can transfer. So things that I might change the way equipment's decided is if I'm working in a community that only has funding, or with a person who's only got funding for one carer to help with the transfers from the bed to the shower commode, we're looking at a shower commode that has significant features to ensure that's safe. Rather than difference in an aged care home where you might have a second person there to be able to assist really easily.
Yep. This question comes up all the time. So the person says, I need a new bed and my provider has told me I can get a king single, but not a double or a queen size bed. I'm going to say to you, why is this? And are there circumstances where it is possible for the person to get a double or a queen size bed?
There's a few reasons for that. One, it's just a general no under the home care package guideline. It has to be a king bed. And if it was a double, what happens is it's harder for a carer to roll someone. So
yep.
If your future needs increase, so when we're prescribing equipment, we're considering future needs. So if we have a double bed, a carer won't be able to help roll you to ensure that we use a hoist. So we've got to stay within the king single so that there's safe access on both sides. There also requires, I've had a lot of people get a double bed and use that with their partner and then have no space to roll and fall out of the bed.
Oh.
So that's happened a few times where someone has accessed that and it's not being appropriately assessed. And that's why the home care package works on that king single or single base program. It allows enough room for someone to roll safely without jeopardizing falling out of the bed or the carer's back or straining.
Yep.
When you are able to access a bed or a larger bed, it needs to be clinically recommended. So for me, I've recommended a double bed when someone dresses independently on the bed. So they might be a wheelchair user and require the bed to roll to help put their pants on or something along right. those lines. If your partner needs, I understand they take the bed away. This is the hard part, is that we need a new bed, but we've got to take the bed that you've got yeah. in place away. So if your partner or if the person in the room needs a bed as well, I would suggest calling my aged care, having an assessment and accessing, if you require an electric bed as well, getting your own assessment done and getting your own, and we can combine it that way. But the home care package, unfortunately, doesn't allow for that unless it's got a clinical need.
Yeah. People also ask, can I take my equipment with me when I move into an aged care facility?
I work a lot in the DVA space. So DVA allows people to take their recliner chairs and cushions and walkers and all those things. Sometimes the provider will even help move it. You just need to ring and ask them because DVA rent their recliner chairs. They actually don't purchase. So it's a little bit different. So they do have to update the safety of the chair kind of thing. And the chairs have to be safety checked sort of thing.
Yep.
So that as well. And also sometimes the aged care facility has equipment in place that they prefer. So a good example would be like if you had a double bed and they only have room for a single bed, then you potentially wouldn't be able to take the bed there. But if you've got a special mattress that we've provided, like it might be a pain specific mattress or a pressure mattress, you can just talk to the care provider to see if that would be okay.
Great. And look, the next question, it's a topic on its own, but we're going to touch on it because it's an important topic. It's an important aspect of older person's care that I think needs to be highlighted. What support is available from an OT for people with dementia?
This is one where we look at creating routine and also things like orientation board. We introduce strategies that might also be when to approach an activity. It might not be, well, we might have support workers having trouble assisting with showering late at night. And so we might say, oh, well, we've done a behavioral check. It might be easier in the morning to implement this and not have so many behaviors or so much distress. So it really can look at when activity's based, how it's based. Have you changed the routine from what they've been doing for the past 20 years? You know, we want to stick to that. And then also assistive technology that might support. So things like a dawn clock is really popular, things that can orientate people to time and place. A personal alarm system is really great because it allows their ones that sense falls within them. So even if the person doesn't have the ability to press the button, the alarm itself will sense the movement of falls. It's a really lot. We like to promote independence, but also scaffold for regression. So it might be we're here, but I might want to start looking at a walker now because I need to introduce how to learn this sooner rather than later. So scaffold for regression as well. So yeah, there's a lot an OT can do in this space, as well as home mods, stuff like that as well.
Excellent. Look, Kelly, this has been such an informative conversation today and no doubt will answer the many questions that people have about how an occupational therapist can support older people. Thank you for your time today and for joining me on the show. Listeners, if you'd like to follow up with Kelly or take a closer look at Forbes Care, especially if you live in Southeast Queensland, the links are in the show notes. Until next week, everyone, take care.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode. Do you have a topic that you'd like us to cover on an episode? Please reach out and let us know via social media or our website, cmeacn.com.au. That's cmeacn.com.au. All the links are in the show notes. And don't forget to hit the follow or subscribe button so you don't miss any of our upcoming episodes.